Blog Talk Radio.
This is All About Wine, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009. Featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on.
Is on.
Here's Ron.
All right, that's people. Yeah. All right, so you getting rain?
The show.
You getting rain?
I did earlier. I got quite a bit.
Moved it through
storm.
Clouds. Little cloud burst here, but nothing significant.
Nope.
It did last night, but not today.
No, it rained for probably an hour and a half or so.
Wow.
Yeah. Good. But I'm more inland from you, so we're like up at a higher elevation, in the mountain area.
That's it's true. Yeah. Yeah. You are in the mountains of Florida. So therefore you get, that rain coming off the east coast hits the mountains and dumps the water.
And the temperature drops from 90s. It's amazing.
So humidity climbs. I went to USF, University of South Florida. They were going to do a hearing aid study. I don't have hearing aids. I probably at times think I should, but I don't want a hearing aid. Well, they were doing a study that had every 2 weeks, you would get a new hearing aid for like 6 hearing aids. So this thing lasted for like 12 weeks. And you would wear a new hearing aid and it would, you would make notes and stuff on your iPhone. I don't have an iPhone, so I couldn't do the study. But they did a hearing test on me, and they found that my left ear folds down over my hearing canal, and so therefore I don't hear as well out of my left ear as I do my right ear. But I'm using new headphones tonight, and oh my gosh, when that opening came on, I really heard it through both of them very well. So yay, new headphones.
That makes a big difference.
It really does.
Yeah.
So that's when I found out about, that's what I told you about the hearing test. That's when I found out that my left ear, and that's funny because I use my left ear to talk on the phone all the time. So maybe I should start using my right ear.
Or your headset.
The headset. Yeah. Start doing it with the headset. That's even better idea. Yeah. So we don't have a guest tonight, but we do have stuff to tell you. And just passing on information, like we're all about wine, so it's just different things about wine, and wine encompasses so many things that it's always fun to have a show like this when I can pass on. Now tonight, most of the program I'm going to start concentrating on Wine Folly. I get an email from Wine Folly. Madeline Puckett is the founder and sommelier with Wine Folly. She's very knowledgeable. She writes the article and all that stuff. She does different things. Most of the time I read her stuff and it's just like the same stuff I've said and all that. Every once in a while she'll come out with something that I go, wait a minute here. But overall, we pretty much agree. Well, tonight I was going through different things to talk about, and I found that I have like 6 or 7 different emails of Wine Folly here with information on each one of them that I want to share. So night's going to be basically talking about the things that Madeline put on there. And I'm not trying to plagiarize. That's why I'm giving her the whole credit for them and everything. So some of that stuff. And you can always subscribe to the Wine Folly email too. It's simple enough. I think it's winefolly.com, but I'll give it to you for sure a little bit here. But first, unless Mike, you have anything to say before we start out here?
No, I think I'm good. Just gonna
all right.
Take some notes here.
I'll let you do the notes and take care of any message ins or anything. If you want to get a hold of us, visit the website and our Facebook rather, and you can just leave messages there.
Yeah,
Blog Talk Radio, and leave messages and we'll see and all that. So if you have any comments or anything. First thing I want to talk about, and this is something that I saw and I went, oh my gosh, a South African winery had a major catastrophe on June the 2nd, it didn't happen June the 2nd. This was the date of this article. It happened, where is it? May sometime, I don't know, towards the end of May here. But what happened was wine cellar Darling Cellars in South Africa is less than 10 miles from the Atlantic Ocean on South Africa's Western Cape. And they had a catastrophe. A 50,000 liter wine tank collapsed. And when it did, it started a domino effect that ended up losing 250,000 liters of wine and also destroyed a lot of tanks and structures and stuff. Now, 250,000 liters, since we're Americans and we don't talk liter, that equals 66,043 gallons. 66,043 gallons of wine. Okay, what happened was it's a chain reaction likely started when a stand supporting one of the 50,000 liter steel tanks collapsed. And this caused the first tank to knock over an adjacent tank, which knocked over another adjacent tank, which knocked over another, dominoes. That's really what it was. Some of the tanks also smashed through the winery's concrete walls, and it also damaged pipes that were in the wall. Nobody was injured, but a whole lot of Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, and Cinsault went to waste. The managing director of the winery, by the name of Ryan, R-I-A-A-N, DeWall, told Wine Spectator magazine, the Darling Cellars team is used to battling the odds, and somehow we always come out on top. But the COVID-19 pandemic has been really tough on South African wine industry this year. I mean, our last year and into this year. So they have been fighting that continuously. And then this hit Darling Cellars and destroyed it. This is first accident to strike Darling Cellars that they... something on this scale. But last year, accidents in wineries have happened. A 50-liter tank ruptured at a Spanish winery, and a mechanical failure caused nearly 200,000 liters of wine to overflow into Sonoma's Russian River. Remember, I read an article about that and told you about that. That was a couple years ago. And a broken winery pipe in Argentina caused another local river of wine. So it's not unheard of that we have these accidents, but it's still devastating when it does happen. Darling Winery has lost its 2021 vintage, they're not panicking. They said, we believe we will be able to source red wines to replace those we have lost. Now, you got to realize this South Africa is 6 months ahead of us. They're in the Southern Hemisphere, and they're actually 6 months. They're heading into, well, they're in fall now, heading close to winter. De Waal, again, the managing winemaker, says, expects to have the damaged tanks replaced before the 2022 harvest, which would be in the spring. So it's about 8 months away. We have received so much support from the wine industry that it is actually humbling to see how many people care for us. We will convert that positive energy to keep us going. So they are going to recover, but oh my gosh, 66,043 gallons of wine. And it flowed, actually, they're 10 miles from the Atlantic Ocean, and it just, the river wine actually made it to the Atlantic Ocean and was spilling in the ocean. So, ooh, that's just sad. It's a sad thing to think that would happen. It did there. So, let's see. Where do we want? We want the next page here. There we go. Wine Folly. I've used Wine Folly before for different information, different things I've passed on to you. And I usually try to give them credit when I do. I have a bunch of different emails here that have information from Wine Folly. And so I thought that it would be a good opportunity to go into it and get caught up on it. So you can, if you ask, Wine Folly says, ask us something. You can email support at winefolly.com. That's WINEFOLLY, Wine Folly. And you can subscribe to them at winefolly.com. You can ask for the e-letter. And it's pretty interesting. They have quite a bit of information that I usually get a couple of weeks. Some of them are advertisements trying to sell stuff. They got a lot of really neat maps and different posters and stuff that they do all the time, and it's probably the best overall supply of posters of all sorts of different stuff wine related that I've seen. They have a big variety of them. This first thing I want to talk about a little bit here is, do wine corks matter? And they got a chemist why wine corks matter when storing wine. So it's, most foods are best as fresh as possible. Peaches, if you eat them on the spot, are great. I mean, anything like that. The exception to the rule is many wines that actually need some aging to taste their best.
Are you there? I don't know if you can hear me, but your audio just stopped all of a sudden, at least on my end. Let's see. I don't know if you can hear me, but I cannot hear you. I have no audio coming in here. So I'll either disconnect or I don't have any bad packets either. So, no bad packets on this end. If you're hearing me, then we've got audio issues somewhere because I don't hear you. Let me see if I can hear the applause. I think Ron called back. Let's try that.
Yeah, there I am.
There you go.
Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you.
All right. Now, I'm sitting there talking, and Remember I tell you that sound beep, 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 beep.
Oh, yeah.
That came on, and I go, I'm gone. That's it. I knew I was, the sound just left. And I don't know why it does that. I have no idea why it does that. But
so good.
Yeah, I would, you know, I was telling Mike before the show, I've used these microphones, and I've got a new computer I'm using now. I use these microphones, computers, I've listened to a bunch of stuff, and I haven't used a microphone a whole lot, but still, though, I mean, yeah. So, well, all right, I'm here. I called in, and I'm back, and I'm here. So let's go back to where we were and talk about corks and the winemakers know that aging process includes letting oxygen dissipate from the bottle, and so they use corks. Now, this is one aspect of aging has to do with the reaction of fruit acids with alcohol. Now, this process reduces the sourness in the wine, but it's really important in tart wines, ones coming from cold climates. If you get cold climate wines, you really need to reduce that sourness in it. The complex oxidation process is the second aspect of aging. So when oxygen interacts with a wine, it produces many changes, ultimately yielding an oxidized wine that has a nutty aroma. This is desired for sherry styles, and it really compromises the aromas in fresh white wines, but this is what happens when the oxygen interacts with the wine. So, the oxidation process provides benefits along the way to that end point where it's not good, okay? So many wines develop undesirable aromas under no oxygen conditions. And a small amount of oxygen will eliminate these trace phthalate compounds. These are responsible for the aroma of rotten eggs or burnt rubber. Oxidation products also react with the red anthocyanin molecules from the grapes to create stable pigments in red wine. The way a bottle is sealed will directly affect how much oxygen passes into the wine each year. All right, now, I have always been told that corks actually breathe a little bit. I was strongly corrected on that by a couple of winemakers that I respect tremendously, and I politely disagreed with them. But they insisted, and I insisted, and we never came to a mutual understanding that either one was right or wrong. Okay, glass is a hermetic material. That means that no oxygen can pass through it. But all wine bottle closures admit at least a little bit of oxygen. The amount of oxygen is actually the key to how it's going to age. A typical cork will let in about 1 milligram of oxygen a year, which is really not much, but it is enough to do the job. So after 2 to 3 years, the cumulative effect can break down the sulfites that added to stop oxidation. And that's what sulfites are used for most of the time, is to stop oxidation. So that, you know, sulfite's not a bad thing. It really does. It helps. So, three major closure options are available: natural cork and technical cork, and screw cap and synthetic corks. Now, the natural corks have been around for about 250 years or so, and that replaced oiled rags and wooden plugs and any number of types of closures that they can come up with to seal it. And it also created the aging process. Until about 20 years ago, natural corks were pretty much the only option available out there. But then they started to come up with others. Now, natural cork comes from the cork oak tree. The Quercus suber is the actual scientific name of it. And the cork cylinder is cut from the outside to the inside of the bark. Now, she says here that it's harvested every 7 years to the life of the cork oak. I was talking to a cork maker, and he said it takes 9 years for the cork oak to grow back and get it to the proper thickness on the cork. So I tend to go with the 9-year time frame for the cork to grow properly. A small fraction of corks end up causing a substance, a smelling moldy substance, and called TCA or trichloronasal, and this is referred to as a corked wine. It gives you a moldy, smelly aroma coming out of the wine itself. Let me back up here. Not all cork comes from Portugal. Only 49.6% come from Portugal. Spain produces 30.5%. Next is Morocco with 5.8% of all cork. Algeria, 4.9%. Tanzania, 3.5%. Italy, 3.1%. And France produces cork about 2.6% of the total. So it is spread out. Portugal is where most people think of cork, but it is spread out to the Mediterranean region and the areas there. And I think that's about the only areas that that cork oak tree grows well, and that's why. So, TCA has one of the most potent aromas in the world, and you can smell it. People can smell it as little as 2 parts per trillion in the wine. Not much, but enough. So when you smell it, and you know it's there. So even if I tell people, you know, there's very few wine bottles that are actually associated with or affected with TCA. But if you go to a restaurant or if you buy a bottle of wine and spend $25, $30, $40, $60 for it, and it's affected with TCA, then that is actually one too many. So they're trying to find a better alternative. And that's what brought on all these different alternatives, is really trying to beat TCA. One of it is synthetic, made by polyethylene. And this is the same stuff as milk bottles and plastic pipes are made from. And after years of research, these corks now perform nearly the same as natural versions, except they have no cork tank, more oxygen, and they are consistent in the oxygen transmission. So these are important things. The consistency is a major selling point to a winemaker, because he knows how long that or how fast that oxygen is going to get to his wine, so he can choose the amount of time that he wants that oxygen. So there's a range of synthetic corks with different rates, and he says, okay, I want this to oxygenize my wine at a certain rate, so therefore it will be perfect to drink in 5 years, 10, 20, 50, whatever. Okay, screw caps are actually 2 parts. They're the metal cap and the liner inside the top of the cap that seals the wine itself. That is actually goes over the lip. Now, this liner is the one that really controls the amount of oxygen getting into the wine. But when screw caps were only used on jug wines, there were just 2 types of liners available. Today, there multiple companies, and they're all offering different types of liners with different types of oxygen transmission. So they're replacing the old 10, which used to be the traditional liner, with new types. So it's a new style. And it's actually better. Screw caps are being manufactured are very consistent with the amount of oxygen that they let in. So performance of the manufactured closures made, you know, now, the new ones, is pretty excellent. They can tell you how long it's going to age and all that. And for regular wine purchase for dinner, or, you know, this weekend or within the next couple of years or anything, the manufactured closures, be it plastic or screw cap, will do the job for you. But for long aging, you really have to go natural cork. It's the synthetics and screw caps are not really to the point now where we know for sure. I read something in a couple different places, so it wasn't just one source, that screw caps tend to create a higher level of SO2 or sulfites in the wine. And once it gets to a certain level, you can really start smelling it and tasting it. So I don't know that as far as screw caps go. I read that, but I haven't seen any other comments about it or anything else. So that is where we're at. You know, if you're going to just, and most wines, let's face it, I read a statistic that shocked me, but then the more I thought about it, the more it seemed true. 95% of all wines purchased is consumed within the first 30 days. And think about it. You buy wine, what do you do with it? Take it home and drink it. People go to the store and buy wine, they take it home, it's for that evening or that weekend. And seldom is wine actually put away in age for any length of time for any reason whatsoever, because you buy it to drink it. The few people that do grab bottles of wine and put it away, myself being one of those, is the small 5% of the people that buy wine. And so, therefore, the closures most of the time don't make a difference. But if you're going to age it, then start looking at a cork and not the new closures. So that's one of the things that, let's see what else there is, keeping your wine fresh. That's the same thing. They talked about the terroir of Walla Walla, Washington here a little bit. We haven't talked to any wineries in Washington either, but now I need to get on the horn and start getting a hold of them. Walla Walla Valley in Washington has a silt and loess soil composition. Basalt give wines a meaty and savory notes, it says. Continental climate, semi-arid rainfall, and warm temperatures. And so therefore, the winemaking process, while it follows traditional methods, and it gives you full-bodied red wines with oak aging most of the time. Pinot Noirs are very popular out of there, Cabernets, Merlots. So that's a little bit about Walla Walla, Washington there. The wine folly goes into a lot of regions, too, and tells you stuff like that. So you can follow that. But, all right, wine folly. I don't want to do that. Or do I? Yes, I do. Yep, there we go. Okay. Sorry, talking to myself while I'm doing stuff. Next one is No matter how careful you are, having a rotten morning after a night of wine tasting can hit anyone. So let's look at how you can ensure a comfortable morning after. This is one of those things where I have to preface this with a one person's opinion type thing on this. I have heard so many different ways to prevent a hangover or to prevent feeling bad after drinking wine. And, you know, everybody swears by their method, and best method is don't drink too much wine. I mean, that really is the bottom line there. You know, watch how much you're drinking because it is alcohol. She says, or whoever wrote this article, let's see. Let's go down to the bottom and see who wrote this article. Yeah, Madeline wrote this one. She says that few ailments that can ruin your night faster than a wine headache. A dull flooding that starts in the back of the head and pushes its way forward and down your neck. Says, is there a wine that won't give you a hangover? And she says, the short answer is yes. Certain red wines are less likely to give you a hangover based on chemical properties and the psychology of how we consume them. So given the ideal red wine, there are some major factors that will help you avoid a hangover. Well, you know, I can understand this, how we consume them. We don't just take a glass of red wine and throw it down the throat. It's something that we sip and that stretches out. Looking for a wine that doesn't give you a hangover? Dry reds with lower alcohol. That's 12.5% to 13.5%. Moderate tannins, Tempranillo, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Verde. And she says spend a little more. Bulk wines and flavored wines tend to have more wine additives. Not so much anymore, but, you know, it's always best to get yourself a good wine anyway, so I'm not going to say too much about that. The lower alcohol will help. Major causes of wine hangover, again, Madeline's toxic chemicals. This is one major organic chemical compound found in wine, beer, and other spirits that can increase the occurrence of hangovers. The chemical acetaldehyde is a byproduct of your body produces while metabolizing ethanol. Liquor with higher levels of acetaldehyde, considered a wine fault, has been shown to cause a more severe hangover. And red wines have the lowest levels of acetaldehyde, so that's why she suggests that. Dehydration. This is another thing that causes hangovers. It says a major cause is the alcohol is a diuretic that inherently causes hypoglycemia. And so, therefore, when you are dehydrated, and it will cause your the headaches and all that. I've had people come into the winery that would sit there and drink glass of water between each tasting, and when you go through 12 tastings like I had, I would think that would get you mighty, mighty full, but they insisted that stopped them from having any type of hangover reaction to the wine. Okay. She also says higher tannin in red wines encourages more water drinking, so I don't know. It might be good for you and all that. I've never tried it, drinking that much water between each wine that I've tasted. But, you know, the thing is, if you think you're drinking too much, don't, you know, cut back on it. You don't have to do it. And don't spit. Spit's really disgusting. When you go in and start spitting out the wine each time you taste, I mean, the little bit that you are tasting at wine tastings, if you're going to do it all day long, then maybe it might be prudent to spit. But if you're going to just taste a few throughout the day, then people really don't know how to do it. She gives some tips here Wine Hangover Recovery Guide. And she said that the best wine hangover recovery guide ever, she calls it. Wake up early. And she said, being awake increases your metabolism, which helps to jumpstart your recovery. So if you do have yourself a hangover, get up early and start doing stuff and follow these steps. Her steps are water, 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 and more water. Says set your phone alarm to drink 6 to 8 ounces every hour. Now, that's not, people say 8 ounces, oh, I can't do that. 8 ounces really isn't much. 6 to 8 ounces is not much at all. People used to come to the winery, and we were getting discussion of drinking water, and I had stemless glasses. And I would say, how big do you think these glasses are? And people would usually guess around 4 ounces, 5 ounces. And they were actually 9-ounce glasses. They held a lot. And it always surprised people that, you know, 8 ounces in that glass was really not a lot. So measure it out. See how much. Get yourself a glass, measure it out, and say, okay, this is my 8-ounce drink. If you drink coffee regularly, be sure to drink extra water. If you're queasy, mix in some baking soda with the water. And avoid coffee. Drink hot water or herbal tea instead. Coffee will promote your hangover. She says go for a short run or a longer walk. Take a not-too-hot shower. And avoid alcohol and greasy foods. It says the myth is to drink alcohol to counter, you know, the old idea of you have a Bloody Mary in the morning to counter, it doesn't work. You don't put alcohol on top of alcohol and expect it to cure the alcohol. That's an urban myth, hate to tell you. And if you get inflammation from alcohol, put a cinnamon stick in your herbal tea. Cinnamon has extremely high doses of condensed tannin, which reduces inflammation. So there you go. And tannins don't cause you headaches either, and neither does sulfite, so don't blame those things. Listen to music, she says. Take a cat nap, if you want to call it that, a 15-minute, 20-minute nap. That helps too. And also, remember how much you drank so you don't do it again and won't get another headache. So there you go. Those are just the wine recovery methods offered by Wine Folly. And let's see if there's something else here on this particular one. Nope. Okay. Let's see what the next one is. And this one, I don't know, how can you host a great wine party? Okay. Have a different wines. And a good thing to do is get away from the standard Cabernet, Merlot, Pinot Noir, and pick up some other grapes that people aren't familiar with wines. That's always fun on a wine party. Get some Syrah or Malbec or Carignan or it just Barbera, different ones that people aren't familiar with, and introduce that to them. That's always fun to do for a wine party. You can also do a formalized tasting, which is something that's fun. Wine Folly sells placemat, tasting mats that have information on it, and you can, they're 20 packs, and you can do send everything else on it. This is a cool thing, it really is. And there's all sorts of drinking games you can do and everything else. Center your party around wine. But my biggest suggestion, if you're going to have a wine party, introduce everybody to different wines and talk about them and get them excited about something other than just the old standards that you tend to find and drink all the time. And it will, people will start liking that a lot more. Let's see. Are these the most underrated wines? Beaujolais, she's finding that, you know, a lot of different wines in the Beaujolais region. Most people aren't, the Beaujolais Nouveau is about the only Beaujolais that they are really familiar with, and that's the early one, although the Beaujolais Nouveaus are sort of really sad because they're a shell of their former self. They used to be really, really good, and now they are not. They've really fallen down in their quality. But that's the people's knowledge of Beaujolais. She talks about Beaujolais here. I'm not going to go into it because that could actually be a whole hour program just talking about Beaujolais and Beaujolais Nouveau and Beaujolais Rosé and all the different ones that they come out of there. So maybe in the future we will do a show on Beaujolais. We haven't done one on foreign wines in a long, long time. How sweet is your favorite wine? Sweetness chart. This is something that people like sweet wines. Sweet hits different parts of the tongue. You can detect sweet because that is one of the basic tastes in your mouth. And so therefore people recognize that right away. There's a lot of things that people say they taste in wine that you can't. You can't taste hot and cold. That's not a taste. That's a sensation. There's just your basic sweet, sour, bitter, salt, umami, and kukami. These are your basic tastes. That's it. And nothing else. And so it's variations from those. But red wines tend to be bold, even bitter finish. Not quite as bone dry is your savory flavors coming out in red wines. Dry red wines has a vegetable and herb undertones. Dry, more of a tart fruits and flowers. Also dry gives you ripe fruits and spices or fruit sauce and vanilla. Semi-sweet, more of a candied fruit and flowers. Sweet wines, fruit jam and chocolate, and then very sweet. Figs, raisins, and dates. That's what you're going to pick up in the taste on it. She has a poster with all these on there and the different wines that would fall into those different categories. Very good poster that tells you a lot of that stuff, and it's very pretty simple. Sweetness chart, you go white wines, and that was the reds basically saying white wines, bone dry white wines, you're going to pick up lemons and mineral flavors, dry savory flavors and herbs, also dry grapefruit and green apple, yellow apple and pineapple. You can also get dry peach flowers and sweet lemons, off dry honeycomb and lemon flavors, semi-sweet tropical fruit and perfume, a sweet white, you get sweet lemon and honey, and then very sweet whites, you're going to find golden raisins, fig, apricot jam. So those are your what she has, the different ones, and then the wines that are underneath those. Both of those posters are available through Wine Folly, by the way, so you can check that out. But your the sweetness is something you're looking for, residual sugar in the wine. And the residual sugar will tell you about how sweet a wine is going to be. I've talked about residual sugars and how to detect it and what it is and where it comes from. Residual sugars will contain carbs. So if you are on a diet, watching your residual sugars will make a difference. A bone dry wine will have 0.6 carbs for bone dry. You get a dry wine is 0 to 10 carbs, off dry 10 to 20 carbs, medium sweet you're looking at 20 to 70 carbs depending on how sweet it is. Then a sweet wine, 70 plus carbs. And so if you're on these diets that say no carbs, watch your wine. It will make a difference. Moderation, anything, anyway, but still watch your wine. And, okay. So, check the charts out, though. She's got some great charts for the sweetness charts for your wine. Wine Folly, check your sweetness charts. Okay, let's see. And let's go back here to this. And we've covered this before, but we've just talked the last couple of weeks to people who have taken their sommelier courses. And this is something else. It says, want to enhance your wine smarts online, or even get certified. You can do so by doing online wine courses. You don't have to show up in person and take the test and everything. Some are free, some are paid. We went through these lists before. I've talked all about the different ones and what are available and all that. Free wine courses online. You really learn stuff. You don't have a person-to-person interaction, and there's no certifications or certificates or anything, but it helps expand your knowledge. Or you can listen to All About Wine every week, and that'll help expand your knowledge also. And then the paid courses, you've got excellent guidance, and the courses are more than just videos. They're peer support, and they have live seminars, and they also, you get certified, you get a certificate, but it costs you money, and it could be, around $200, and sometimes for certification and courses, that can be up to $500. So, it's not, you have to have the knowledge, and you also have to have the money. If you're working for a place that needs the certification, they usually do it for you. Pay for it for you. It's easy to find information, though. Go to YouTube, and there's what happened there. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay, good. Yeah. There's something happening on the screen, and I didn't know if it lost me or not. Go to YouTube. Find stuff on there, wine stuff on there. You can learn a lot. Subscribe to Wine Folly. She always has a lot of stuff on there, interesting things. And so there's lots of different ways you can go at it. Wine service for servers and hospitality. These are good things to get into. The WSET, the Wine and Spirit Education Trust, is one of the good ways to do it. There's videos there. You have videos for Guild Somm. And Wine Folly also has videos, so it can expand your knowledge there. You can get these things for free, too, unless you're going to go into the actual jobs of needing those, then stay with the free. You can also check out Wine 101 page or subscribe to get the free PDF guide for reference from Wine Folly. They have all that. and just a lot of interesting free stuff there. And then you can start getting into the paid stuff. And I've talked to you a lot about the different paid things. They range anywhere from here's $29, $110, $90 per month, $215, $600, here's $1,100. So there's all sorts of stuff. And you've got regional things you can do, and regional wine scholars for different things. That's going to run you from $600 to $800. Lots of stuff you can do. I've talked about certifications before and all that's involved with it and everything else. So you can always check out a past episode of All About Wine and find out that stuff. I just wanted to hit this lightly. But Wine Folly does have a course, a free course that you can do that really is, I listened to it and I went through it. And it's really, you know, quite thorough and interesting. So one of the things you can do that way. Sommelier, you can do that. The beginner, if you work in a tasting room or you want to impress your friends, you can do that. Certified sommelier, that is working in a wine bar, restaurant, a wine store. This is gives you a certification there. Industry experience pros, these are the ones that go further steps in the sommelier. And then you can get the mastery. This takes up to 10,000 hours of practice. And by the time you get this, you are teaching the pros and you are the a top dog. Very few of these people actually exist. I think there's, I don't know, I hate to say a number, but there's very few of them in this country and very few of them around the world. So something to look at. But Wine Folly's Wine Styles Tasting Course, that's something you can go into and check out. And it's regional wines, tasting tips, maps, guided video experience, and it's all for expanded knowledge and to help you understand everything. This one isn't free. They do have a free course. This one isn't free. What does this one cost? Let's see. I'm trying to find out on this. Like everything, they make you scroll through everything to find out. $29, that's not bad. And then there's others, the Ultimate Tasting Package for two, which is $200, Ultimate Package for six, which is $470, Ultimate Package Tasting Package for 12, $780, and different things you can do and go in there. But want to expand your knowledge again, you can go into this. This has got great reviews on this class. So, ways to do it and ways to expand your knowledge. Again, I always suggest All About Wine. We have covered all sorts of topics over the years. And if you want a topic that you are not familiar with, then you want us to discuss it, then email us. We will be more than happy to do research and find out details and everything and discuss it for you. Okay, let's see. I think I have one more or two more. Yeah. Has your wine gone bad? Cork taint and other faults of wines. I've talked about different flaws in wine in cork taint. This article, it talks about the different ways that wines can be bad. If you open up, don't smell the cork. The cork's not going to tell you anything except that it smells like a cork. The first thing you need to do is smell the wine. You can tell if it's oxidized. That just, it loses its brightness. It starts changing colors and stuff. That's why you should look at the color. And an oxidized wine, you know, they have tools and stuff that's supposed to make it better. Basically, it's bad. I don't recommend drinking oxidized wine, but you can if you want. There are different tools to try to fix it. TCA, cork taint. That's another one. About 2% of all wines bottled under corks have cork taint. I've heard it's higher than that. I've heard it's 3.5 to 4%. Either way, 2% is even too many. The barnyardy, the wet cardboard smell and all that. Different ways to fix it? Yeah. If they work, there's all sorts of different things out there. What was it? 3 weeks ago, we had someone on who said that his filter stops the sulfites and the smells and stuff in a wine. Yeah, okay. I mean, also, saran wrap is something that we've been used. They said that that will stop cork taint. But one of the problems with that is that the old saran wrap formula created in 1933 by Dow Chemical contain polyvinylidene chloride, or PDC, and that chemically binded to TCA and removed it from the wine. You can take the old saran wrap and wad it up and put it into your wine, stir it around and pull it out, and you got rid of cork taint. Well, saran wrap no longer uses PVDC. So, that's not going to work. It's they stopped using it quite some time ago, actually. So, if you have a tainted wine, return it to your shop. There's not much you can do about it. It's not going to, take it back to the place where you bought it. Sulfur compounds, there's another one. Decanting can lessen the sulfur compounds, but it doesn't always work. You can smell sulfur. Sulfur is that rotten egg smell of burnt rubber, cooked garlic, skunk smells, farts. I mean, that's all the sulfur type. Mercaptan is really what the flaw is called. And decanting it, letting it breathe, does help it. That's one of the better things you can do. Secondary fermentation is another flaw you can find in your wines. This is usually a yeasty smell that you're going to pick up in a bottle. A lot of the wines that don't have added sulfites can very easily start the second fermentation because the yeast will start working on the sugars in the wine and will cause it to ferment a second time. So that's one way to do it. She says, how can you fix it? I will read her. No, you can't, but do some research into the stall to make sure it is not supposed to be there. She says, throw the wine into a decanter stall vessel and shake the living hell out of it to get rid of the bubbles as well. So there you go. There's bubbles and a psst when you open up the wine. It's a second fermentation, and it's sometimes a pain. I had a couple of them affect me on the winery. Heat damage. That's when the wine has been stored improperly, referred to also as a cooked wine. You can smell this. Smells jammy, sort of a off sweetness to it. And it's not a pleasant overall smell or taste. Can't be fixed. It really should be returned to wherever you bought it. If you get one that is heat damaged, they should take care of it during the process of shipping, and they will, most places will happily exchange it for you. UV light damage, also light strike. This is really more common than you think. This is what happens when light, and particularly fluorescent lights, can strike of wine, champagnes, Pinot Grigio, and Sauvignon Blanc, or the most delicate ones, and those are the ones that you're going to find most often. This will make the wine smell like wet wool sweater. Damage caused because of the UV rays and storing wine near the sun or near a window or under, well, fluorescent lights. I mean, any long-term under fluorescent can do it. Can't be fixed. If you get wine that is that, then tell the shop that you got it from. Don't store this in front of a window, particularly if it's a champagne or Pinot Grigio or Sauvignon Blanc. Those things are very susceptible to UV light damage or light strike. So take it back to them. Let them know. And it's microbial or bacterial taint. You pick up a wine, you smell it, you go, oh, nice. This doesn't quite smell right. Something's off on this. This has got a, well, some may refer to it as a mousy smell. It's bacteria. And many microbes live in wine fermentation, and it can be brought up and all that. So you got to be careful with that stuff. Is there anything can be done about it? No. Once it's there, that's it. There's nothing you can do if it's affected. Some stores and shops will take it back. If you bought it, your wine at a winery, they will definitely take it back. They want to know that stuff. But if you got it at a store or something, more than likely they won't, you know, because, you know, it's, they'll say, well, you don't like this wine. You're bringing it back because you don't like it. And you'll say, no, no, no. It's got, you know, it's got a bacterial smell. No, well, and so you can try, but probably the best thing to do is just, you know, toss it. Or, as she suggested, get a microscope and start looking for things in your wine. And, let's see, I went too fast there. Tartrates, these won't hurt you. You'll find tartrates, it looks like little glass shards in the wine, little crystals sitting on the bottom of older wines. They are harmless, they won't hurt you. If you're scared of them, filter your wine, it will be fine. It doesn't hurt you at all. A wine that smells green is not going to hurt you. Brett smells like a farm. Some wines you don't want, other wines, winemakers try to bring out the Brett. So just, you know, the basic faults that I read to you there, those are the ones you really need to be aware of, because those are the ones that will cause the wine to taste bad. And you go out and buy yourself a bottle of wine, you want one that tastes good. So there you go. And I think, let's see, is there another one here that I wanted to talk about before we finish up Wine Folly? Well, this one is, you know, I'm going to read this to you quickly here. It says, what's the best wine to go with steak? Well, I always think that's a tough question, because it really depends on the cut that you're getting. And the different cuts will dictate different wines. Usually red wines, but they're not all Cabernets, and they're not all Pinot Noirs, and they're not all Merlots. You need to get the full body or a medium body or a light body to go with your wine, or to go with your steak. And so the different cuts will dictate that. So, you know, it's not always easy to find one. If you're getting yourself a robust steak, then yes, get your heavy wines. But otherwise, you know, don't overpower that steak with a wine that is too heavy for what you're eating. If you have yourself a filet mignon that's rather delicate, then don't overpower it with something that's real heavy and full of tannins. Get something lighter. And we're done with Wine Folly. So, and the show.
Adeline Puckett, thank you very much.
Yes.
It was a lot of good information there for everybody.
She's
and
very good. She is
it.
Very good. And everyone can subscribe to it again. It's winefolly.com, and you can go there and subscribe to the e-letter. So, all right.
Yeah. Good. Good information. Let's see. We have 8:05 right now. Our next show is going to be June the 10th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Eastern Daylight Time. And hope you enjoyed it. And we'll tune in again next week for another episode of All About Wine and the talk show podcast that's been on since 2009.
Wow.
Dedicated to the wine industry. Yeah. And the wine industry, the weather, things that we did over the weekend. And
all sorts of stuff. Yeah, we've talked about a lot of stuff over the years. But basically wine. Basically.
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah, for the most part. We've talked about ghosts, and we've talked about cemeteries, and basically wine.
Yeah, that's the whole premise of it. But
yes,
a couple of other snuck in there as well. So we'll see you. Oh, wait, let's just start. No, not yet.
Whoa.
You're trying to. Yeah.
Boy. That Tempranillo player was just a little bit anxious there.
Ready to go. It's like, my turn? No.
not yet. We'll tell you.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We'll see you all next Thursday. Thanks again. And have a good week and a weekend. And be safe. And join us next Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern.
Thanks for listening. Be safe.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
I played the whole thing, and I didn't even play it on the video portion. Oh, well. Anyway, okay, we're done. End this and go to the green room. Skip it. All right.